Okay, let's begin Daf Ayin Tes. Halacha Gimel. Tachricha Hameis, shrouds for the dead, Madat Shal Chamor, a saddle of a donkey, and Behemishum Klayim. There's no Klayim restriction. There's a big footnote here, number 6, which is that sitting on Shatnas is Min HaTorah, always permitted, but there was a Isidra Bonon, because it might fold over the person's body. But if the shatnez is a very stiff item that won't fold, then they weren't geyser. So that the saddle is very stiff, so there's no concern. That's why it's mutter. Now, the Gemara said before on 75b that that's only if the skin does not touch them. Now the question is this Isser of the skin touching them, is that applied to the saddle as well? So two approaches here. Either the Rush holds that since the Mishnah doesn't mention the saddle above with the mats and the cushions, so you can infer from that that the heter for the saddle is unqualified, and therefore you could do it even when you're wearing the skin is touching it. Other Rishonim disagree, and they say no, it's the same restriction as the mats. You can't ride a shatnez saddle with your skin touching the saddle. And why did the Mishnah not include it before? Because no one would ride a donkey unclothed, which I think says a lot about the Der Hatznias of the previous generations. Let's go on. Number 7, it says, Lo yitein et samadas al kisefo. You can't put the saddle on your shoulders. Afilu hotzi alas azevel, even to take out the manure or the dung. So what you're doing is you're using the saddle to act as a buffer between yourself and the dung so that the dung doesn't smell up your body. So the question's like this. We're talking about not the Isser of Levisha here. Here we're talking about the Isser of Loyalo Alecha. So what's going on over here? We said that when it came to it says over here, the ruling requires clarification. We learned before that the Isser Deoraisa of having Klayin on yourself is only to a situation in which Klayin provides a benefit to the body in the matter of the clothing. But if the Klayin does not provide any such benefit, there's no Isser. So for instance, before we said the, I think it was Rabbi Yerkin who allowed the barber to put the Klayin over him to protect his clothing from the hair that he would be cut. So that's not an Isser of Klayin because he's not wearing it for the benefit of the of warmth or wearing it. He's just using it to protect himself from the hair. So it's mutter. So then why would it be forbidden to place a saddle on your shoulder to carry out dung? So what do you need this mishnah for? That's the basic question. So Rash Sirilio says that besides protecting your clothing from the soil, the thick saddle protects his shoulder from the pressure of the weight he is carrying. And protection from discomfort counts as a benefit for your body. So that's one way of saying it. The other thing is that the thickness protects your body from getting the odor, and therefore that might also be considered a bodily protection. The Gra says actually the saddle is not prohibited min haTorah, it's only drabbanon. Since the saddle sometimes provides physical comfort, such as when it's raining, so therefore it's always forbidden. Okay, so that's the big footnote on the bottom of page 79A2. So now we have another page. The next page, 79A3, also has a lot of footnotes. Very important footnotes on this page as well, so this is going to take another couple of minutes. The people that sell shatnez garments can sell it the way they usually do, modeling them for their customers. As long as they do not intend in the summer to protect themselves from the sun, the winter to protect themselves from the rain. And the tzuin, the people who are very big tzaddikim, so they go ahead and they're machmor on themselves and they don't model it themselves and they put it on a stick behind themselves. They don't have it on them at all. So over here it sounds like it's totally in kavana. So this is asked as a steer. Before we said that wearing shatnez, in order to evade the taxes, the Mishnah said on 75b that it was osir. So you had no intent to derive physical benefit, but nevertheless you were osir. So how come over here you're allowed to wear it as long as you don't have any kavana? What's the difference? It's the stira. Okay? So again, the stira is that in one Mishnah it said that if you didn't have, if you were wearing it just to evade taxes, it's nevertheless usher to wear it. So it sounds like there's your kavana doesn't play a role. Over here in this Mishnah on 79a, it says that if you're mechay ksus, that as long as you're not mechaving in the chama meachama, so your kavana is going to play a role. So that's the stira. So there's two approaches to this. One is that these taka are a contradiction. And they say that the one Mishnah is like Rav Shimon, one's like Rav Yehuda, of course, the famous Machlaikas, whether Dov Shimon's Kavan is Osir, which is Rav Yehuda's Shita. So before the Mishnah that said the taxes was Osir, that's the Shita of Rav Yehuda. This Mishnah, which says that the Mechrei Ksus could sell it, that's coming out like Rav Shimon. That's the Rash, and the Rush explain it that way. Now, the problem, small little side problem is because of Shimon is Maida by Psik Reshe, so it seems inevitable that it'll protect him from the heat or the cold. So how can you say that Shimon holds his mother over here? So they're saying that because he's already wearing clothing already that would protect him. So therefore, this doesn't offer any additional protection. That's the Rosh and the Rosh's approach, but the Rambam has a completely different approach. Why? Because the Rambam, Paskins, let's see, he says this is in Hilchos Klayim, Perek Yud, Halacha, Tes Zion through Yud Ches, whatever. He says you're allowed to model the Shatnez clothing, but also he says you're also to wear the clothing to evade the taxes. So the Rambam passes like both Mishnayos. He holds it, obviously there's no machlokes. So how do you explain the Rambam? The Rambam seems to take both Mishnayos and include them. Kesef Mishnah says that the Mishnah is not talking about wearing the clothing in the usual manner. That would be a taka osir. In other words, in the case of the wearing of the clothing to avoid the taxes, that was osir because that was regular wearing the clothing. Over here, you're not going to be wearing it. You're going to kind of like have it drape over you. So that this is an isser halah. So for some reason, which is explained in all these different marmal covers he has here, which you could see yourself in the second column of 79A3 footnote 9, a very long footnote, but it's got a ton of Mar Mekumis trying to explain what the difference is between Halah and Levisha in this regard. How come when it comes to Levisha, then we say that Dov Shem is covered as Osir? When it comes to Halah, we say that it's Mutter. So that's going to be a whole problem. We're not going to get into that. Let's move on. He says in the footnote at the bottom, by the way, that might be a makom to be mater when we try on a suit in a store, even though it might have shatnez, because you're only trying it on, and you're not machaving to have any warmth from it, so it could be, it's totally in these different mefarshim, different heterim for that. The other pshat is Zav Shem Eskaven, or other heterim. Okay, the Mishnah then says another case which is very similar to this, except it's Tofrei Ksus, Tofrei Kedarkon. The Tanakhama says that the, I shouldn't call it the Tanakhama, but the Tana says that the people who make garments can sew the climb garments in the usual manner. The garments are draped over the laps, even though there might be some warmth that might be generated by that, even though they are climb. Now, these people aren't making climb begotten to sell. They're obviously selling them to Goyim, and that would be mutter, because they're not mitzvah. It also has to be obvious that these are klayim, and that way you don't have to be worried that the goyim that you sell to are going to sell to other yidden, who would then be nichshol in shatnez. So the Teretz says it must be that you're sewing clothing, which are shatnez, to sell to goyim in a way in which it is mutter, and the Mishnah is telling us that you could have it on your lap with the same idea that you're not mechaveh. Here it's obviously clearly halal, because this is not a levisha. So maybe that's why the Mishnah gave the second case, to make it clear that we're only talking about halal, which would be an interesting approach to how to learn the stira like the Rambam. Okay, but then it says that snum typhon ba'aretz, they snum wouldn't rely on this heter, they would put it on the ground. Okay, now that's the large footnotes of the first two pages. Now we're on 79a4. The Gemara begins. Tachricha emes. So it says in the pasuk, mesim chof, ksiva mesim chofshi. Kiven she adam mes nasa chofshi min hamitzvahs. Once a person dies, they become free of mitzvahs. There's a footnote 15. It discusses the question of why we put shatnez on people that are on dead people. The lechara, when they come back to life, they will become mitzvah again in mitzvahs. That's what you might have said. So one approach here is that it's chofshi, means that you're going to be free forever. Zosomeres, mitzvos betelos la'asad lavo. That's a Gemara Nida 61b in Bavli, which means that there will be no more mitzvahs. So, in other words, at the time of death, there's no question that then the mace does not get any benefit from the clothing, obviously. But the question is, what about when they come back to life? So, must be that there's never going to be another Isser after that. Others explain Chafshi means, I'm sorry, that's the second shot. What's the first one? Hold on a second. Sorry, that was the second Perish that he says. Others explain that the word Chafshi means free, permanent freedom. That's Ritva Nida 61b. Bavli teaches that the mitzvah will cease to apply in the future era. It's to the era of resurrection. Were mitzvahs to be applicable in that era, we would not bury a person in the shrouds of klayim, because that would cause him to violate the prohibition of wearing shatnez when he's resurrected. So, there's no pasuk necessary to teach us that the dead may be dressed in shatnez, since they do not benefit from their clothes. There is no prohibition. Now, the first paragraph, I think he was going a different mahalach, where he was going that it was going to be mitzvahs after Tiyasa Mesim. So they learned that Gemara is only talking about the period of death, but not the life after death. So, this is telling me a chiddush that you don't have to worry about that. Okay. I guess the question here is, do you have to be worried about after the resurrection that he's going to be wearing shatnez or not? So, the first group of Rishonim hold you don't have to worry about that. The second group holds you do have to worry about that. So, the fact that you're allowed to do it shows you that there is not going to be any chiyuv mitzvahs later on. Okay, so that'll be the question. Then he discusses the basic question, which is, why will the mitzvah cease to apply after the resurrection, which is a more basic fundamental question. His answer is that it's because there won't be any Bechira Chavshas anymore, because it'll be dedicated to rewarding man for the good deeds he performed in this world. Other people say even during the Mashiach times, there will be no issue, because everybody will have no desire to do evil. Whatever. This is all conjecture. We don't really understand what's going to happen then. So let's just not get too involved in these details. Whether there will be Bechira Chavshas, not going to be Bechira Chavshas, it's not that important for us to know about that. But it is important to understand what the Gemara means here. When it says Chavshi, does it mean Chavshi only at the time of death, during death? Or does it mean even after Atkiyat Samesim, you're going to be Chavshi then as well? So that's a very interesting discussion there. Footnote 15 discusses that. Now we have Agarta Gemara for the rest of the page, which is pretty interesting. Agarta about Rabbeinu HaKadosh after he dies. So Rabbi Tzibar Shlosha Dvarim, he commanded three things, on his deathbed, I guess. Or maybe he wrote it in his will. I'm not sure how he issued these directives. No, it says B'shas P'tiras Min Ha'olam. It says it explicitly. At the hour of the departure from the world, this is when he gave these tzavos. So he said, number one, Al tozos amanasi mibesi, don't kick out my widow from the house. Al tispeduni bayaris, don't eulogize me in the small towns. The ones who will serve me during my lifetime, they're going to serve me after my death. Now they're going to explain each one of these independently. Al tozos amanasi mibesi. First one. Question is, Al-Abbas Nisahi, isn't this already a Mishnah? Why did Rabbeinu Kodesh have to tell us this? It's already a Mishnah. Al-Mana Sha'amra, Efshi Lazuzmi Base Bali. If the Al-Mana says, I don't want to leave my husband's house, so then the Yarshim cannot say to her, go to your father's house and we will support you. Rather, she can remain in her father's house, in her husband's house, and they have to support her there. So why did Rabbi have to say, don't kick my almana out? My answers are Rab Droysa, the lo yom relay, that they should not tell her based on the nesiyusa, who this is the house of the nasi, meaning it's publicly owned property, so to speak. Just like, the White House, Lahavdalah Havdalis, after whenever there's a new president, the new president moves into the White House, and the previous president doesn't own the White House. So you might have thought the same thing was true by the base nasi, so therefore, even though their regular almana can't be kicked out of her husband's house, but maybe the base nasi is different. It's set aside for the incoming nasi. So kamashulon Rebbe, what's Rebbe telling us? Rebbe's telling us he never took a penny from the tzibur. He is in full ownership and control of his house, and therefore they have to leave her. That's the answer to the Gemara. Not only does she get to stay in the house, but she also has full use of all the furnishings, like it says in the Braisa. Footnotes point out that the previous din was a Mishnah. So there was that's why the Gemara had a question why Rebbe had to say it. Since he was the author of the Mishnah, he knew, everybody knew his Shita from the Mishnah, so there was no need for him to say anything. Here it's a Braisa, it may not have been as well known, and therefore it was necessary for him to say this. So the Braisa says, Darba Batim, that the widow can continue to dwell in the home of her husband, Kishim Shaisa Darba Henu Bala Nasum Adin Sayyam, just as in the same manner if she would have lived in her husband's home had he been located overseas. So this is an interesting way of viewing death of a spouse, that they're overseas. They should continue to use the vessels. Just like when he would go on a trip, she would be able to continue to use his credit card. She's supported by the estate. Okay, now we're on Amud Beis. Ayin Tesson Beis 79b. What's the second one second thing. So we have the first one, we've taken care of not to kick my almana out of the house. So we said the pshat is, why was it necessary? So we said the pshat is, oh boy, am I tired. I'm trying to review what I just said. I can't remember what I just said because I'm a little exhausted right now. That they shouldn't say that it's the bias of the base nasi, and number two that she can continue to use the kalim. Now, altis paduni by rasam neimachlikas. Don't eulogize me in the towns because of the machlikas. In other words, small towns that won't have enough room for the huge crowds that were sure to come. There would be fights over the limited space. Instead, he wanted the eulogies to be limited to larger cities, where there was sufficient space for everyone. This is a very interesting Gemara because we know, unfortunately, in our time, not that long ago, there were certain Gedolim who had very serious events that took place during their Levayas. People actually got trampled to death. And therefore, Rabbeinu HaKadosh was aware of these concerns. Although Bnei Brak is considered a large city, I would say. Nonetheless, you see that these are concerns that had to be taken into account. Third directive, Mishan Nitpal B'Bechai Yitofu B'Moisi. So now this one, we have different approaches to this. Amar Hananya de Tzipirin. So Rav Hananya said of Tzipori, again, Rabbi HaKadosh died in Tzipori. He was buried, it said, where was he buried? He was buried in another place. That's why he's been traveling from one town to another town. I forgot to look that up. What was it that, let's see. What does it say where he was buried? Yeah, footnote 16 on 79A4 says that Rebbe died in Tzipori. He was buried in Beis Sha'arim. And he did not want to be eulogized in small towns along the way, a funeral route. Let's see, it says, Ayaras are towns larger than Kfarim, which are villages, but smaller than Krachim, and smaller than large cities. I guess he wanted only to be buried in large cities. Okay, back to the Gemara. So, Rav Hananya said that the people that served him during his lifetime, for example, Yosef Efrasi and Yosef Chafonim, they served him during his lifetime. Now, it could be that the Rebbe wanted them to be the ones to handle his coffin during his burial. But the Bavli and Subas 103a disputes this, maintaining that this was merely the initial understanding of his words. People thought he meant that they should serve him after his death in this world by occupying themselves with his burial. However, once people saw that these two servants died afterwards and were buried before Rebbe, so in other words, they realized Rebbe intended that they should serve him in the world to come. So, the question that he raises in the footnote is, then why was it necessary for Rabbeinu HaKadosh to even mention it, since they're going to die anyway? And what's the difference whether people hear Rebbe say this or not? They'll be dead, and then they'll go and be his Meshamshim in the next world. The answer is because he wanted to get rid of any kind of allusion or allegation that these people, perhaps they were not serving him properly, or maybe their death was a punishment because they weren't properly, weren't proper people. So Rabbeinu HaKadosh is making it clear that these are tzaddikim gemurim, and therefore they're dying in this, they're dying so that they'll be available to serve him in the next world. Okay. Spooky stuff. Rav Chizki and Maisef, Al Tabru Alay Tachrichan. So he has a additional tzavos that he said, which is don't put multiple shrouds on him. So hey, Aroni Nukuva, let the base of my coffin should be exposed bars to the ground. Milsa Amrin, some say this statement tells us Besadin Echad Nikbar Rabbi that he was buried in a single sheet. The Rabbi Omar, Lakama Devar Nashazal Huasi, because Rabbeinu HaKadosh's opinion was that not the way a person is buried, the way he comes back to life. You come back to life wearing different begonim than the begonim that you were buried in. Okay? So, it seems to me that this really is, he says that this is actually a machlokas. So, the Chacham disagree with Rabbi, right? The Rabbanan Amrin. Rabbanan say, the way he dressed is when he leaves is the way he dressed when he comes back. So this will go directly, it'll feed directly to our earlier discussion about the way we started off the Gemara with a person is chafshi. So when we bury him with shatnez clothing, are we worried about when there's a resurrection, whether he's going to be wearing shatnez? So according to Rebbe, there's no shaila because the way a person goes is not the way he comes back. He'll have new clothing anyway, so you don't have to be worried about that period of time after the resurrection. So we don't have to even get him. So in other words, we don't have to worry about what is going to be the status of, is a person going to be chayav mitzvos l'asad lavi or not. That's irrelevant because you're going to come back with different clothing. But according to the Rabbanan who hold that the way you're buried is the way you come back, so then maybe there might be a makom to be discussing this. Tani b'shem Reb Nosson, kusus ha'yuresim ha'adam l'sha'ol, he bought him on the garment that descends with the person to sha'ol, is what comes back with him. My taimo, what's the source of pasuk in Iyov, of course, 38:14, tis ha'pech b'chomer, kichomer, I can't see it, kichomer, chosam, v'yis yatsru kumolavush. The human form is transformed upon death and becomes similar to clay. Then at the resurrection, the dead will stand up as they were dressed. So you see that they're resurrected with the same clothing that they were dressed with. So you have a Amish Beferish of Pasuk. So it says on Tulinus, which they say this is on Marcus Aurelius, the Roman emperor and philosopher, ruled from 161 to 180 CE. A very close friend of Rebbe, some people say maybe even the guy or whatever it is. So he asked him a question about this pasuk. Maltes hapach chomer chosam. Amalei, so Rebbe said to him, Mishu mevi es hador humalbisho. The one who brings the generation back to life is the one that will clothe it as well, referring to the Ben Shalom, right? Capital H, when I say he, capital H, he, the Hashem will be the one that will reclothe us. So this is Rabbi Akash Lashitase, who holds that you don't go up with the same clothing you went down with. Rabbi Yochanan Mefaked, Rabbi Yochanan instructed his attendants as follows, Albashuni Bururika, dress me in gray shrouds. Lochi Varin Velo Ukomin, they won't be white or black. Why? In Komin, Benitzikai, if I rise among the righteous, who wear white, I won't be embarrassed, because at least he's not wearing black. In Kamas Ben Yerushaya, if I rise among the wicked who are wearing black, Lo Gavas, I won't appear haughty that I'm wearing gray, because I'm not wearing white. Wearing gray, he could blend into either group. So here you have Rabbi Yochanan, of all people, hedging whether, you know, how he's going to come up with which group. Rabbi Yoshia Mefaked, Albashuni Chivarin Chafisin, bury me in freshly pressed white shrouds. Amar Lei, so they said, Ma'atav min Rabach, are you better than your teacher? Rabbi Yochanan was not sure whether he would come among the tzaddikim or the rishonim. You're very sure of yourself. You're saying, give me, you know, pressed white shrouds. So I'm not lying to me. I should say, I'm not behis, no avdei. What respect should I be embarrassed about my deeds? I did everything in Dasa Kadim. I was Shomer Torah Mitzvot my whole life, and I should be, you know, very, very sure of myself. I'm sure I will be resurrected. These are just simply two mahalchim and how to go about life, and not everybody's the same. This is an important lesson of all the things, not so much the lesson of Rabbi Yeshua's attitude, and Rabbi Yochanan's attitude, but more to me, it's more important, the lesson that we see from the Gemara, not everybody is the same. You can't just pick a figure and read a Gemara and decide, oh, I want to be like that. It's not such so black and white. Dress me in freshly pressed white shrouds. My fine frock, I place my shoes on my feet. My staff in my hand. Yahavuni al sisitra, position me on my side. In Asi Mashiach, if Mashiach comes, I will be ready. So this is a clear sign that according to this Gemara, that it's, that Tchias HaMeisim will happen prior to Bias HaMashiach, which is a great discussion whether Mashiach comes first or Tchias HaMeisim comes first. So from here you have a Oshtikal Raya that Tchias HaMeisim will come first. Now, finally, the Gemara talks on 79b3 about the Tzipporiya Amrei, the people of Tzipori who were very enamored and in love with Rabbi Akash. So they said, Madam Malon Rabbi Domef, if someone says to us, the Rebbe has passed away, and on Kathlina, we're going to kill him. Odeklin Bar Kapara. So Bar Kapara has looked at them. Reishim Mechase, his head's covered with ash, so to speak. Mone Mevazin. His clothes are ripped. He's mourning over Rabbeinu Akash. On the line, he said to them, Yitzukim ver elam tfusim luchas and bris. The righteous ones and the angels are grasping the tablets of the covenant, right? The gover yodim shol er elam, and the angels are gaining, they gained the upper hand. Chotfus haluchas, they snatched away the luchas. Omrin lay, so they said to him, to Mach Rebbe, Rebbe's passed away. I'm a lion. So he said to them, Atanam, he said, you said it. I didn't say anything. The Karan, they all taught Kriya, and it was such a loud Kriya, also called the Karun Lugud Pafsa, Mahalat Klasimil, that it reached Pafsa, which was 3 mil away. I heard the sound of the Kriya. I'm not from Hashem Rabbana, Maisa Nisim, Nasa Baisa Yom, there were a bunch of Nisim. Ereshamas Haisa, it was Ereshamas, Nitzchans Kalah Yaros Laspido, all the seas came in to be masped him. Ashrune Tamne Esrei Kanishon. They put him down. Up. They would say Hespedim, put him down. They say Hespedim, put him down, and so on. Total of 18 times. Ashrune the Beis Shroi, and they took him to Beis Shaarim for burial. So that would have lasted normally well into the night, and it was Erev Shabbos. But it was a nace that occurred, and Toloin Yoima, the daytime extended, until everybody who went to that burial was able to actually reach home before Shabbos. And filled up a barrel of water. Now we're on Daf 80, Daf Pei. Umalik Las Aner, they would light the Shabbos candle, Kimin Shishokal of Chama, and then as soon as the sun set, Kara Hagera, the rooster crowed. In other words, because the sun set, but it was like a delay of game, but so they rushed it. Minashamayim, they rushed ahead the night hours. So the rooster was crying out right after the sun set, because they had to skip all that time. Shrine Mitzikin Amrin, so people began to be stressed. They said, Dilma Lechalin Shabbos, maybe we're Machal Shabbos. Yotzit Sabaskol, Sabaskol comes out from Rolan, Komishal, and his Atzel, as Fetisha Rebbe, Vusser, Lachayelam Abal. Whoever was not lazy and they participated in Rabbi Nokash's Levaya is going to have a Chelik and Olam Habal. Now, this statement, Rabbi Yisrael Chochan Spector has a problem with this. What's the, not a problem, he explains this. And I think it's like Dhamma 2, it says, I think, his work of Kleshim Mishpat. Where is it? It's Nachlas Yitzchak. It's Hakdama to Nachlas Yitzchak, Chayshu Mishpat, number 6. Okay, so he says a Gevalda Pshat. He says, what's the Pshat? How could just participating in the Hispedim of Rabbeinu HaKadosh merit such a great reward that you're Muzum Olam Abba? What's the Pshat, such a thing? So he says like this, that the death of a Tzaddik is like is Mechaper on the door, like Yom Kippur. Rabbeinu HaKadosh holds that Yom Kippur is Mechaper, Rabbeinu Asa Tshuva, Rabbeinu Asa Tshuva, he also eats Mishal Yom is Mechaper. So it comes out that the person who was involved in the Hespedim of Rabbeinu HaKadosh, he is going to have the idea of Rabbeinu HaKadosh be chal on him, his shita of Yitzhak Shalyon, Bin Mechaper will be chal on all those people. So if you weren't involved in his Levias, then you don't merit that special heter. That's an interesting shot. Now, the other thing that the boss calls said, Bar Min Katsara, except for this laundry man who didn't come to Rabbeinu HaKadosh, so he's not Mizum Olam HaBa. The Shema can't say he heard this. Salak Le'igra, so he goes up to the roof. Salak Garmei, Utlak Garmei, Umis, he threw himself off and he dies. Then, Nafka Baskova Amra, Afilu Katsara, even the laundry man is also Mizum Olam HaBa. And that's what we'll stop here.